Why are you doing this, Nori?
I feel like it's my responsibility.
You feel like everyone is your responsibility?
No! This is different. You could have landed anywhere and you landed here. I know it sounds strange, but somehow I just know it's important. It's like there's a reason this happened, like I was supposed to find him. Me. I can't walk away from that, not till I know he's safe. Can you?
Fine, I won't tell anyone.
Thank you.
Rhode Island, welcome to the Rings of Power with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to the Rings of Power on Amazon Prime Video. So sit back, relax, and let's chat the glory of the Second Age. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I have realized that I never, ever, ever want to get just stuck in the ocean.
Yeah.
That looks miserable.
Quite.
You got all that miserable water around you. You can't take a drink of nothing of it. And then, like, when Hal Brand put his hand in the water to, like, put it on his hair, I was like, what are you doing? You're just completely
just
wet
hot
all the time.
He's hot.
Oh, my God.
Because he has all that salt drying on him.
Oh, misery.
It's no joke.
I hate the beach.
And you
I
don't even
sand
have, like, Moana next to you singing.
No, and Grandma Tala, you know, as a manta ray flying below you.
None of that.
No, you don't get any of that.
Disney lied.
I thought I was going to have an idyllic mirror image of myself in the evening looking at the stars, wondering and realizing who I am.
Alas, you are stuck on a boat.
Nope. I think the Galadriel experience is probably a little bit more realistic, even with the worm.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, everybody, we are so happy to be here with you discussing this episode of Rings of Power. But before we do, we just want to give you a heads up that this episode is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. It's your one-stop shop for all things beauty and skincare. You can learn more by searching the hashtag MinuteWithMary on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. On that note, let's get into the show. Recap for those of you friends in the future who are binging this and you don't know where episode two begins. I'll tell you, in this episode, Galadriel has her little boat friend and they chat and get to know each other a wee bit while they're running away from a worm, well, swimming or sailing away from a worm, I guess, in a storm. Elrond goes to visit his friend Durin. He's not too friendly. And then Nori tries to help the stranger and Arondir decides to go in a tunnel and Bronwyn kills
An orc. Yeah, a totally bad news orc. Yeah, even that sound is...
I do need to stop for one moment before you jump in.
Okay, what do you got?
The clip that you played in the beginning of this episode, mm-hmm, I was listening to it, and as of now, I think I'm Nori. I think I'm Nori Brandyfoot of the characters.
In what way?
I want you to listen to this. Can you pull up the same clip again? Exactly where you had it.
Yeah, give me a minute.
Okay.
Hold on.
I would love for you all to listen to this clip, but picture me. Maybe you don't even know who I am, but hi. Picture a tall, freckled lady, and picture, you know, Poppy being Blake.
Yep.
And we have found
an orange
kitten in the woods. All right? Play it, Blake.
Okay, here you go.
Why are you doing this, Nori?
Why are you doing this, Mary?
Continue. Just...
Like, it's my responsibility.
You feel like everyone is your responsibility.
No.
Yep.
This is different.
No.
Just keep listening.
Could have landed anywhere and he landed here. I know it sounds strange, but somehow I just know he's important. It's like there's a reason this happened. Like, I was supposed to find him.
Yes, I was supposed to find the little orange cat.
Yeah. Me.
Me.
I can't walk away from that. Not till I know he's safe. And you?
Look at you, Blake.
Fine.
Pretty much word for word.
That is exactly what happened when we got one of our cats.
7 years ago.
Yes,
when absolutely. I found a cat in the woods. A wee little kitten.
This cat that was barely 5 minutes old.
Yeah.
And Mary comes up to me, cat in hand. I have to take
feel like
home.
It was meant for me.
Me.
I just need to make sure he's safe.
Oh. And then...
And then we kept that cat.
For a
we
long
named him
time.
Sassanach after our love of Outlander.
Didn't fire Sassanach.
Even though he was a male and he had orange hair, he reminded us of Jamie Fraser, but he was.
He could still be an Outlander.
He was an Outlander. Yeah. He didn't belong there.
That's right.
And then he grew so big and so fat and started peeing all over our kids'
and
furniture.
And he was picking on our other cat, Khaleesi.
He was picking on Khaleesi. And we found Sassanach a home where he could be by himself. And he's grown even bigger.
Yes.
And he is living a safe, luscious,
happy,
well-cared
juicy
for life. But we too had a stranger.
And he's Jabba the Hutt now.
Enter our world. And I felt like he was my responsibility. And as you played that clip, I just think of all the different creatures and things that I find. I do this with like people that I find on the road.
Oh, God, yes. All the time.
All the time. If they're homeless, if they're drunk, people just asking me for directions, I'll say, just follow me. I'll drive you there.
And every conversation that Mary has with me about this always ends with, fine.
So as you play this clip, I just love that this is what you played.
Very interesting,
as this
Mary.
Is a look into our marriage. I'm Nori, and you're Poppy.
Yeah, that is 100%
And we're just
going
to have to
true.
Watch this whole season, keeping that in mind.
All right, so... This episode, the second episode of The Rings of Power, is entitled Adrift. Once again, directed by J.A. Bayona, a really, seriously, a talented director. The show was lucky that they have him at the helm here. And you should know that name because he directed the premiere of The Rings of Power. And it was written by Jennifer Hutchinson. Now, Mary, I know you don't know that name, and I know you, the listener, you more than likely don't know that name, but Jennifer Hutchinson is actually... an extraordinarily talented writer. And she has basically kept her entire career, for the most part, in the Breaking Bad universe. She wrote with Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould and all those guys for Breaking Bad, but also Better Call Saul. And she left Saul to write for this show. So it's important that you know this name because she's really talented. And... the fact of the matter is she came from a show in the Breaking Bad universe. You know, either it was Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. She also wrote for The Strain a couple of episodes as well, but mainly the Breaking Bad universe. And that universe is very lore driven. It is very, there's lots of characters. There's a wide world. There's a lot of different vast characters to keep track of. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Hutchinson is really capable of doing that. So even though you may not have heard of the showrunners, J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, rest easy knowing that Jennifer Hutchinson is in the writer's room because she's just super awesome. And when I watched this episode, I could feel that. I could feel, and there's some great instances of this that I want to talk about. But yes, Jennifer Hutchinson, keep an eye out for that name.
I will.
All right, good. Very good. What do you got for your rings rating, Mary? How many rings are you giving this episode?
This episode is the same as the first episode, a 4.8. Still really like it. Mm-hmm. For me to rate things highly, I often need it to be something I can rewatch frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it a lot.
Sure. I'm giving this one a 4.3. I liked it better than the premiere, but it's basically the same. And I'm giving it essentially another 0.2 because of Jennifer Hutchinson.
But I can also appreciate that they released these two at the same time, so it is still premiere-esque, and I can appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, when Mary and I were discussing this podcast, we were debating about whether or not we should do just one episode for the first two, because that was how the show was presented to us. It's clear that this was meant to be seen with the first one. You know, it tells a more complete story that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the idea for a pilot or a premiere is to tell not only a story that is interesting and ironic in ways and one that captures your attention, but it also, it needs to tell its own complete story by itself. And it does so, I think, especially with The Stranger and Nori, but it also does it, I think, with Galadriel too, when she ends up, you know, in the ocean and then she ends up getting rescued and she meets Halbrand. And she is in this position because simply of her actions at the end of the premiere. So seeing the two together, I think, is important. All right, Mary, what do you got for your GBG? You're good, you're bad, and you're great.
Okay. And I do this for new listeners because it reminds me of an Oreo, reminds me of a sandwich. We have GBG conversations with our children every single night at dinner.
All the time. Yep.
And this way, things end on a positive note. And now Blake actually uses this at work.
All the time.
He doesn't tell his employees.
No, God,
GBG.
No.
But if he has to give feedback, he now doesn't just do B's.
Yeah. Now, usually it's a BGB, but not anymore.
Yeah. Once I heard one of your phone conversations, I said, I think you need a GBG that, baby. All right. So my good is I just want to hang with the Harfoots. I feel like that needs to be a shirt.
Hang with the Harfoots?
Hanging with the Harfoots.
Oh, I am putting that at the Mary and Blake store at the end of this episode.
Yeah. Hanging with the Harfoots. That's what I want to do. Sansa Snails.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you can even have that as a little. You can even have that as a little tagline. Sounds snails. Hold the snails.
Hold the snails. Yep, that's what it is. Hang with the Harfoots. Hold the snails.
I am here for everything. Their merriment, their music, their firefly lanterns. Here for it all.
Yep.
My bad. I'm bored when I'm on a boat.
Don't blame you.
Okay.
I love cruises, though.
I mean, I know I'm supposed to be afraid of this worm. I know. I get it. The part that I liked the most was when Galadriel was sinking. Not that I wanted her to die. But that was the part that I actually really cared about. And what sucks is I bet they talked about really important stuff, but that part was just boring to me. Maybe because I'm thirsty and I don't want to pretend I'm on a boat too. I don't know. But for those moments on the boat, I was bored.
Well, yeah, that's where things slow down pretty significantly. I don't blame you.
Schnooze fest, and they probably, as I said, drop some important info.
Yep.
I don't care. Blake will remind me about it.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is during the boat scene, Galadriel is doing this thing with a rope where she's like,
yeah, like, what the heck is she doing?
What are you doing?
It's
not like a rudder.
She's been on a boat before.
Yeah. Like, she's like pulling on this thing for no reason
other than... There's no sail.
There's no sail. There's no rudder.
No.
She's just pulling on this thing.
It's not like she's securing it. She's not using it as a paddle.
And maybe it's like her way to like get her aggression out.
Yeah, maybe she's a fiddler. She needs a
fidget. She's got to be a
fiddler. Fidget spidget.
Fidget widget.
Whatever.
A fidget spidget. Yeah, sure, Barry.
Isn't it a fidget spinner?
Fidget spinner, sure. Isn't it called a fidget widget?
I don't know. We don't use them. We grew up in the 80s. We didn't get that stuff.
We went outside
and Dunkaroos. You got some energy?
You know what our fidget spidget was? A soccer ball.
My parents would make me just clean the car. Go wash the car. You're too busy.
You have nothing going on.
No. Go rake the neighbor's lawn. But yes, She's not going to pay me. Oh, well.
Go shovel snow.
Why are you
but
still
it's
here?
It's the summer. I don't care.
Yeah, goodbye.
Figure it out.
Oh, my goodness. I agree. That was it. It to me, just kind of reminded me of moments when people are on stage, so they can't really travel as much room to room.
Yeah.
And they're stuck, so they have to fidget a little bit.
They got to do something.
And so, same thing. Galadriel's stuck on this raft. Can't go anywhere. So you just got to fidget. And it felt foolish. So, yep. Yeah, I was bored on the boat. My great, however, is I want to be, I think I've watched too many Netflix documentaries and I want to figure out who the bad guy is. Is it the stranger? Is it Theo? Is it the boat friend? Who's the bad guy? Generally in Middle Earth, in the Tolkien universe, good is good, bad is bad. It's sure. pretty straightforward.
Yep.
But I don't know about these three fellas. Okay, I just don't know.
You don't know about Theo, the stranger, or Halbrand?
Or even Celebrimbor.
Oh, Celebrimbor.
Celebrimbor.
Yeah.
I don't even know about him.
No, I think Celebrimbor is a good guy.
I know. I'll get into him.
Okay.
But the four of them, I don't know if I trust you. And I kind of like it. Yeah. So I'm sitting here like Sherlock Holmes, figuring out who's going to go bad first. Mm,
are you the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes?
Of course.
Are you the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes?
I am 100% the Robert Downey Jr.
See, I love Adi J. Don't get me wrong. But the Benedict Cumberbatch the Sherlock is the greatest Sherlock to ever been put
Oh,
to screen.
I concur. I would not be the best Sherlock.
Oh, okay.
I would get distracted once I got to the Harfoots looking for...
Hang with the Harfoots.
Yeah, I'd get stuck there. Weren't you supposed to be doing something? I forget.
Sure. We're the snails.
So that's my GBG. How about you?
That was your grade. Okay, my good.
My grade is that I think everyone could be bad.
All right,
all
gotcha.
These new people, and I'm excited to find out if any of them do turn...
Yep, gotcha. All right, I have a good, and it's a tie. I know Mary loves when I have ties. And the first one, the first good is, again, the show continues to use the visual language from Peter Jackson. And in particular, mm-hmm. there's a shot when Arandir is in the tunnel. And as he's looking down the tunnel, when he hears this sound, but obviously and presumably is an orc, there's this rack focusing zoom shot. Mm-hmm. That goes down the tunnel. And that is something that is famous that, you know, a lot of directors use. But in particular, Peter Jackson uses that in Fellowship of the Ring. And he uses it quite a bit. And I just love the fact that the show continues to call back to its own, to the iconography from Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. but in a way that is fun and creative. And if you pay attention, you get to see these things. So I like that. But the other really good here for me is the fact that in addition to the Lord of the Rings universe, it's also expanding on it in a way in that the Rings of Power is expanding on the Lord of the Rings universe in that orcs in the Lord of the Rings movies are kind of cannon fodder. They're just a bunch of friggin' log carriers walking around and they get killed with pretty much a lot of ease. I mean, they're like one arrow and they're dead. And there's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of them that we all see them get killed. And we all know, okay, you know, when the elves and everybody's out there killing everybody, they're just kind of the orcs are just kind of there and they're getting killed. However, in this episode, they make the orcs scary.
They really did.
Like legitimately scary.
Like horror movie. Somebody's in your house and you stupidly climbed upstairs hide in your bedroom and there's no other
closet.
Way out.
Yeah. Yeah. Very reminiscent of Halloween, mm-hmm. If you will, with Bronwyn or Alfred Hitchcock in the closet looking at this orc doing his thing. And the way the orc even comes up, like brings his hand up. Over the, like, his claws over the floor.
His acrylic nails.
Yeah.
Mm. You got the coffin-style nails.
Coffin-style nails. Mm-hmm. Really, legitimately scary. And the fact that the orc doesn't die, it takes forever for this orc to die, even though Theo's trying to, like, hang him, and then they're stabbing him, and then he's throwing kids into the tables. And, you know, like, we got 50 million things happening in this kitchen scene, and the orc is the center of it. And it's great. And not only is he hard to kill, but the visual design of the orc is phenomenal. It mm-hmm. makes orcs scary again. It makes it look like, okay, there's real trouble when these things are around. You know, maybe, you know, when Halbrand is around or Galadriel is around, they're less troublesome. But for our main characters outside of those... Yeah, it's going to be difficult.
The creators said that they actually based that scene on a scene from Torn Curtain, Alfred Hitchcock's movie.
Oh, look at you. Yeah. I was right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Just and that scene they said took like 8 minutes. Yeah, just to show that like killing somebody's hard.
Yeah.
Normal people fighting for their lives. It's not just one swift move. We're not all Galadriel.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We're not all Jason Bourne, you know, just offing people left and right. These are just regular people fighting what, you know, by all accounts is a pretty evil being and derives their evil from Morgoth and Sauron. Mm-hmm. And you'd think that their one job in life is to kill humans and everything else.
Yes.
They'd be pretty good at it.
Yes.
So, yeah, I like that. All right, my bad. The CGI in the worm attack, I thought that the CGI was pretty bad. And it's not necessarily the worm itself, but like it's a combination of a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. It's the water. Water is incredibly hard to do in CGI. Like same thing with like fire and the manipulation of sand. And those are all, you know, you got to think that every ounce of water in a computer-driven shot has to be created and it has to be moved and it has to splash. And that is all computer-driven and it's all calculated. And you have to have literally supercomputers do this stuff in order for this to happen. And even when you do use these supercomputers to do it, getting it to be lifelike is very hard. Add on top of the fact that there's a bunch of mist and having the boat go within the mist on top of the water, the worm itself splashing about, that's a very difficult shot to create. Mm-hmm. The good news about that shot is that J.A. Bayona, what he does is he shoots around the worm to the best of his ability, so he doesn't necessarily show the worm in its big grandeur, and he shoots around it in a sense that, yes, there are CGI shots, yes, there are visual effects, but they're kept, I think, to the best of their ability at a minimum so that we don't have that sense of, okay, this is fake. You know, we call that the Jaws approach, right? Like, don't show the shock. If you don't show the shock, you're going to be in good shape. And oddly enough, Steven Spielberg did that because he couldn't shoot the shock. The shock was broken in Jaws. So it's true. They couldn't get it to work. So that's why they never showed it.
I love that. I love it.
So my great, I also, again, once again, have a tie. First is the blood moving into the sword when Theo is holding the hilt.
Yes.
And the sword starts materializing. And that is, I think, indicative of two things. One, Theo is hearing this sword and it is calling to him in some particular way. And now it has part of him and that part of him is helping manifest this sword. That is bad news for Theo and Bronwyn and what's coming out.
Maybe think of the spell in Goblet of Fire where they needed a drop.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Of Harry's blood to bring Voldemort back to life.
Right, good point. Good point. So I just like that. And I like the fact that there are things that are happening outside of Galadriel's control. There are things that are happening outside of Arendir's control that trouble is brewing in places that you don't know and you don't expect. And you think, okay, well, yeah, everything's going to be under control because the elves got it here and, you know, Galadriel's on the way and we're going to figure this all out. And it's like, no, it's like this little kid that could bring the harbinger of all that is evil in the world back to life. Mm-hmm. I really like that. But my real great is the fact that the show continues to build on something that we talked about last episode, Mary, and that is the playfulness of, yes, of this world. Because as we talked about in the last episode, Lord of the Rings, the films, are important because of the relationships that are shared between our characters, mm-hmm, and the fact that we care about what happens to them because they are approachable. They got problems that we can relate to, and they share friendships. The idea behind all drama is to see how characters change, but how relationships evolve and what happens to those relationships. If someone dies, if a friend turns on someone else, it's almost like when Frodo was starting to listen to Gollum more than he was Samwise.
Yes.
Your heart was
potatoes.
Your heart was broken over that scene. And you look at you know, Samwise, and you're like, and he's just crying, and you're crying with him, and that's because they spent most of the films mm-hmm. building that relationship up, and the show is continuing to do this in many different ways. And that being said, the ways that this is happening is whether it is, you know, the rock banging between Elrond and Durin. And how that, like, the silliness of that. Like, there's this, you know, match and Elrond and everything. But what is born out of that? The fact that Elrond has been away for 20 years, and that's a blink of an eye to an elf, but that is a full lifetime to a dwarf, which then leads to the dinner scene, which out of that is born Disa and Durin's marriage and their kids and the kids running around with the helmets on and banging their head on the chandelier and the whole thing. And you hear Durin with his kids, and this is all really important stuff. And eventually, when you find out that Durin is hiding something from Elrond later on, that hurts mm-hmm. because of the friendship and the silliness and the relationship that was that came out of this stupid rock banging scene. You know, like yeah. that all of that comes out of that. And another great thing too, the relationship between Nori and what the heck's her name?
Poppy,
thank you.
The character that is you?
Yes, Poppy, yes. Like when they're bringing the stranger up in the wheelbarrow and they stop to talk about it, and it's a very serious conversation, and then all of a sudden the wheelbarrow starts to go down the hill, and she's like, great goats, you know, and, mm-hmm. and then, I'm really worried about the wheelbarrow. Like, all of these things, that works, and that sets up what we played at the top of our episode, which is the conversation that is basically you and I, Mary. Mm-hmm. That wheelbarrow scene sets that up so that when Poppy does make that decision, you understand why she makes that decision. And that is why I love the fact that it's Jennifer Hutchinson who writes this episode, because she knows enough to invest in these little whimsical moments, these little friendship moments, so that when the big stuff happens, you care about the little stuff. Mm-hmm. That's what I love. That's my great. I know I went on a big rant there. I apologize.
It's okay. We're still here for it, Blake.
That's that. All right. Mary, you ready for the Fellowship of the Ring? You ready to hear what everybody else has to say?
Sure am.
Let's do it.
Strangers from distant lands, friends of old, you shall be the Fellowship of the Ring.
Irene Perot starts things off. She said that she was very pleasantly surprised. Now, this review, friends, is about the initial two episodes, just because Maureen, like a lot of people, watched them together. She said that she gives both episodes four rings. It looks great, but still needs to find its footing. My good is that we dive into the relationship between familiar characters like Elrond and Galadriel, while giving proper and effective introductions to the newcomers. The way we meet the Harfoots, for example, is really neat. You quickly get a sense of each character's personality. My bad is that we actually have only met half of the main cast, and I'm just a little worried things are going to be hard to keep up with very fast. The story already goes in many directions, and I just hope we don't end up with a bunch of boring parts. My great is that the show is absolutely stunning visually. From the production design to the effects to the costumes, everything is gorgeous. Hashtag Bezos money. Directing wise, it's also beautiful and very cinematic. And you could tell a lot of work has been poured into making this very first season. Can't wait to see the rest of it.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, Maureen is totally right in the fact that at the end of this episode, Mary, the plot, I feel like, is either going to be really focused on Galadriel and her journey with the characters that we've already come to meet sprinkled in and how they all converge at one point eventually in the season. Mm-hmm. Or what could happen is that the plot goes way off the rails, totally banana land off the rails, and everyone's doing 40 million things and you won't be able to keep up, especially because we still have more cast to meet, like, and not just ancillary cast, like legit main characters. Mm-hmm. So, Maureen, I'm with you in the worry, in the worry category a little bit there. All right, Mary, what do you got next?
The next one comes from Allie Kate. I'm giving it 3.5 rings. I'm definitely not giving up on it yet. It doesn't feel like Lord of the Rings so far, but there's an awful lot of setup. It's rare that a pilot will knock your socks off, so I'm holding my tongue for a while. I do think they're missing the camaraderie that was so endearing almost immediately in Lord of the Rings, and this show will suffer quickly if they don't establish some decent character relationships soon. I like the actress playing Galadriel, but the elves are so strong and stoic that I can't imagine caring about them that much. And also, as an Irish person, the worst part was the damn accents of the Harfoots. Hollywood can never get an Irish accent right. And even if anyone says that that's not meant to be Irish, it's clearly taken heavy inspiration from the Hollywood Irish, which continues to be an assault on our ears.
Listen, Allie, if there's one person on this planet that gets it more than you do, it's me. Because Hollywood just runs like... rampant. Like, it is awful the way that they characterize the Boston accent. It drives me up the wall. And as much as I love Benedict Cumberbatch, his Boston accent
not great,
might be the worst I've ever heard.
Agreed.
In Black Mass. It was awful. But Mary, do you think that Allie is right that the relationships haven't been established yet, or they didn't establish them as quickly or as well as Lord of the Rings did?
Well, I would disagree.
Okay.
And I would disagree because the different races of people and creatures in this show, we spent the most time with elves. I would say, particularly in the first episode.
Yes.
We spent a ton of time with the elves. And then amongst that, aside from the Harfoots, we're with an elf the entire time.
Yes.
You know, whether we're in Khazad Dûm or we're on a boat and or we're in tunnels. And the interesting thing with the elves is they are so stoic.
Right.
And they don't seem warm and fuzzy. Like, they're the opposites of the Harfoots. Whereas in the Lord of the Rings, we are at the Shire. We are with all of our sweet little Bagginsons and Pippins. Where was
Sam? Even Gandalf.
Yes. Yes. We are with merry, happy, sweet, and welcoming people.
Yes.
So I'm looking at this show through those eyes. Okay, why am I not connected with these people? Oh, yeah, because they're elves. And you know how you have those people in your life that just kind of have that relationship boundary and it's just who they are? You know those people, yes, who don't like to hug? Like, if you're a hugger and you're like, but that's my friend, and they're not a hugger. And it's not that your friend's bad that they don't like to hug you. They're just not a hugger.
Yep.
Okay? Or maybe you have some friends who are a little bit more demure. Or maybe they don't react as big as you do.
Sure.
That is who they are. So for me, seeing it through those eyes for the elves, I still think that they have connections. They're just not as warm as fuzzy as the Harfoots or the Hobbits that gotcha. We're used to.
Nope, I get you. All right, why don't you do the next one too, Mary? This one comes from Roseanne, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Hi, Roseanne. She writes in, found it mesmerizing from the beginning and completely set apart from Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings masterwork. It adds even more depth to the story that we know without competing with it. Stellar cast, but outstanding.
Oh, hold on. I got to play it. Outstanding.
You makes me want to shout. Props to the actor who played Arandir, who conveyed a full depth of character in a few scenes. And Roseanne gives it 5 rings. And I would agree, out of all of the elves, I actually feel moved more by Arandir.
Because of a relationship.
With a non-elf.
With Bronwyn.
Most likely.
Yeah, like, that's the reason why you connect with him. Because he actually is, again...
Yeah, he has, like, a non-elven relationship. When we see elves with elves, it's like people hugging with a sheet stuck between them.
Yep.
Okay, like, what is this?
And that also means, Mary, here's the thing. It's no coincidence that Galadriel is eventually paired up with Halbrand. Because you're going to get... an elf and non-elf relationship. That doesn't mean that anything is going to be consummated in this relationship. It just means that there is going to be something brought out of Galadriel that Halbrand or whoever they meet up with at the end is going to bring out of her, just the same way that Bronwyn brings it out of Arendir.
You know, this kind of reminds me, I was watching recently watching an interview with Emma Watson, our beloved Hermione from the Harry Potter series.
You're a wizard, Harry.
And she was asked the difference of dating men in Europe and in England compared to men here in the United States, where she went to college. And she said, you know, that the boys that she would date in England, they took forever to court her. Mm-hmm. And they were very quiet. And eventually they might insult her in a mean ways of kind of like trying to flirt with her, but insult her a little
Draco
bit.
Yeah, Draco Malfoy.
And that they were always well put together. They were always well dressed. And, you know, it would take a very long time for their affections to come to the surface and for them to start dating.
Sure.
And then she said, of course, she comes here to Rhode Island, to go to college at Brown University. And pretty soon after, some guy walked up to her in flip flops and said, hey, you know, I've really enjoyed chatting with you. Let's go on a date. And she said it was just so straightforward, genuine still, but like just very straightforward. Yeah. Here's how it is. Scruffy, but all right. So that's how I'm kind of feeling.
Could you imagine just being some jabroni from like Warwick,
Rhode Island.
And like, and going up to freaking Emma Watson and just saying, hey, let's go on a date.
Well, they were chatting, she said in the interview.
I know, so but still, could you imagine having the Stugats to do that? Just you're Hermione Granger, and
him.
I'm some jabroni.
Good for him.
You know that that I my main job is the Greek fest, and you're Emma Watson. I don't know. It's just it's amazing.
But
to
that's
me.
What it makes me think is that if I see it through those eyes, that they even just think about different cultures in your state, in your city, you know, different families are used to interacting a bit more openly or a bit more reserved than others.
Sure.
I'm a very open person, in case you can't tell, friends. So when I go to a very reserved household for dinner,
doesn't work out well.
No. And I think these people are elves.
Yeah, that's bad. When Mary shows up, just being her bubblies, being her Nori self.
Yep.
It's me.
They're like, where are your shoes? Why didn't you brush your hair? No. Oh, man. Yes. So there you go. Thank you all, friends, for submitting your feedback. Don't forget, we check our feedback on our social media fronts. We also have a voicemail that you can call. You just go to maryandblake.com. You click the upper menu and the contact button, and you can leave your voicemail there. We would love to have your voice here on the show.
Yes. So, all right. Oh, by the way, Mary, we get a brand new opening sequence for this episode. It's totally brand new, and it actually follows the same, oddly enough, it follows the show is following the same template as House of the Dragon. House of the Dragon did not have an opening sequence in the first episode, yet it did in the second and third. Rings of Power does not have one in the first episode because we get right to it, and the second one does. What did you think of the brand new opening sequence? Do you like it? Do you not like it? What do you think it all means, by the way?
Well, we've got it's little bits of sand.
Yes, and rock
little
and whatever.
Rocks and sand, and they're forming different formations, correct?
Yes.
And what do you see in those formations?
Well, the things that we see like the trees that come out. It's almost like the tree of life, a Celtic tree of life, but on both sides.
I see it as the trees from Valinor.
Oh, no, but it is. I'm saying, but in its design, the way that it is, a Celtic tree of life. We also see nine rings that come up of it, too. And then also we see when, like, the Sauron kind of ugliness, dark theme kind of butts its way into the theme. Mm-hmm. We see black sand moving throughout the lighter sand, mm-hmm. like a snake almost. There's a whole bunch of other different stuff on there. Really, honestly, it finally ends with what appears to be mountains. But what it made me think of, Mary, is the way that actually Disa talks about resonating.
Yes. Well, that's all I was thinking about as soon as she said that.
Yes. Like and how each bits of the story that are being told has a place in the story, right? Like it, no matter how small or how big, it all has a place and has a spot in the larger tapestry of what the story is trying to say, whether that is Nori or it is someone as high and powerful as Galadriel or the high elf king. You know, everyone has a spot and every one of their actions, it sends ripples throughout and creates different formations of life for everybody. So that's what I took out of that. But yeah, the resonating and moving the rock and understanding, you know, where to dig, what to find, how to find it, and where, you know, you just leave something alone. That's what I took out of that.
No, I agree. And, you know, it was interesting because, of course, I've now rewatched this episode several times. And what I loved about it, you just visually watching it the first time, it's very exciting. And just seeing the sand move in different ways that we recognize, some of which we may not recognize yet. But then, like you said, when we get to learn about the resonating, mm-hmm. singing to the rocks, some of the rocks, you know, where to dig, where not to, where things are moving to, and then rocks not to touch, mm-hmm. and not to go, you know, not to leave alone. And so it makes me very excited to delve into the musicality of how this may play a point in a picture, mm-hmm. that digging may bring about darkness, that really there's going to be secrets within rocks. And, you know, I'm really, as a musician especially, having not just our conversation about the resonating, but then seeing these opening sequences through the fact that there are vibrations as music is playing, which is now moving sand and rocks in essence, gets me super pumped.
Do you think that this season gives us, when the dwarves dig just a little too deep in Khazad Dûm? You remember mm-hmm. in the Fellowship of the Ring, and mm-hmm. you know, Gandalf, you shall not pass, and yeah. unleashes the big demon. Do you think we get that in this season, or
we're gonna have to find out?
And you know, is the resonating part of that? And you know what? Is the demon there because Sauron comes back to life? Like, there's a whole bunch of different stuff that's at play here. I think that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
I concur.
Notice, Mary, too, that when the episode begins, it starts with Galadriel, and she's looking up at the starry sky. And it is the same constellations that the stranger is telling the fireflies
yes.
to create, to go up and mimic the constellations. Mm-hmm. Tell me what your thoughts are about that, Mary. Is Galadriel and the stranger connected the way that we thought they were in the first episode? And is this visual confirmation for you that they are connected?
You think, wait, when did I say that I thought they were connected?
Well, remember when we were having the conversation when we said, did Galadriel see the comet and okay. that's the reason yes. why she jumped? Or did the comet appear because she jumped? Well, because she jumped. Like, we were having that conversation. But it seemed to us in the first episode that they were inexorably connected in some mm-hmm. particular way.
Okay, I understand now.
So is this visual confirmation that both Galadriel and the stranger are connected in a deeper way than the story is letting? That in a deeper way than the story has led on so far, but is alluding to?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't thought that far.
That's
about
why you
the
got me, Marvin.
part of me just wanted to sing Fievel's little song from you know, when he's
An American Tale. I got
American
you.
Tale, and it's, you know, we're under the big under the same sky. Oh, God, I'm like forgetting, you know, when they're both singing to the same star, he and his sister.
Sure.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, but I don't know the words.
I don't know it either right now, which is killing me because I love that song.
That's your gig, kiddo.
It totally is. Yeah, but that's what it made me feel like. We're all under the same sky right now, and mm-hmm. I did not get that. Sorry.
So, yeah, do you think that they are connected in a way that the story...
Galadriel and the stranger?
Yeah.
No.
Really?
I'm not.
How come?
I'm seeing it as the stars are telling them something. Not that because Galadriel's looking at the stars and Stranger is mimicking the stars with the fireflies that they are connected. I'm seeing it as the stars are telling them things.
Understood. Okay. Understood. All right. So let's just get into this conversation right now because we brought up the stranger. Who or what do you think the stranger is?
Well, let's go through some options.
Sure.
Okay. Obviously, loads of people are wondering if it's Gandalf because he's an old guy with a beard.
And he covers himself in a gray blanket.
He doesn't mean to. It's just the only thing that they've got at the heart.
But nevertheless, again,
still,
nothing is wasted.
Nothing is wasted.
There's always a point to everything.
Of
at least
course.
That's a Merry and Blake Media commitment.
Yes. So that has been.
And he talks to the. He talks to the. The. Why am I have? Why can
fireflies?
I not?
Fireflies.
Fireflies. There you go. If my brain would work. He talks to fireflies the way that Gandalf seems to speak to the butterflies. And then also it would explain why Gandalf has a love of hobbits, because the people who actually would have helped the stranger are, you know, proto hobbits, if you will, the Harfoots. That would kind of make sense.
Okay.
And, you know, also too, when you think about it, remember when Bilbo was kind of, you know, giving Gandalf a little bit of an attitude, and Gandalf was like, Bilbo Baggins, like his voice became like really big and prominent, and it scared Bilbo.
Yes.
Same thing happens here. Just, you know, a little bit more aggressively. So all of these things kind of point to the idea that it's Gandalf.
Okay. I don't think so, but I appreciate that theory. I don't think Gandalf is supposed to be here in the timeline this early. Once again, book fans, they're probably screaming right now, like, yes. No kidding. But I don't think he's supposed to be here just yet. So I'm not putting my money on him. Remember, my great is that I'm thinking everyone is evil. So I think he's an evil person. I don't know who. I don't know what.
Yep.
But I think he's bad news bears.
So that's also something that has come up, speaking of evil person, and that is, he could be Sauron.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's also some visual language that seems to suggest that he might be Sauron. That is when, you know, he shows up and it lands, it looks like he's in the eye of Sauron. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this little note that Nori falls into the pit, and the fiery embers and the seeming to be lava does not burn her. And if you recall, Galadriel says in the first episode, evil is so prominent here in the northernmost waste lands that fire does not give off heat. So there's a suggestion that it's the same kind of evil.
Yeah.
And when he wakes up, the fire goes out. And then when he goes back down, the fire comes back again. Like there's a whole bunch here. And then, of course, the other part is after he does his magic with the firefly snake, because I forgot the freaking name again.
I got you.
The fireflies die.
Okay, so here's why I really think he's evil. I don't know who he is yet, and I don't know what he is yet. I don't think he's Gandalf. He came from that meteor that isn't hot, like you said.
Right.
Check number one for bad news bears.
Yep.
When his meteor flew across the sky, the yellow leaf started to turn black. Check two, bad news bears.
Mm-hmm.
Then fireflies die. The moth didn't fly. The moth didn't die when Gandalf spoke to it. It flew away.
Correct.
Okay? All those little fireflies just died.
That's true. I mean, unless they're doing the same thing that they kind of did with Galadriel, where it's like they began Galadriel's character as someone who is fiery and angry and in hellbent on killing Sauron.
In my opinion, no good
character. For the sake of an arc.
No, in my opinion, in the Tolkien universe, no good character would be the reason that hundreds of fireflies would die.
That's a fair argument.
I'm going to stake a claim in that.
A fair argument.
The stranger is not good.
Yeah. Part of me also wonders, maybe he's not Gandalf, but maybe he is one of the first wizards to show up in the Lord of the Rings universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's talk of blue wizards, you know, and that they did show up in the Second Age, which is what eventually leads to Saruman and Radagast and what's Gandalf showing up in the Third Age.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're going by what the books say here, and it's reasonable to assume that they are following some of the timeline that the books establish. But the other idea here too is like they have a bunch of characters from the Lord of the Rings universe, most importantly rather Durin and Galadriel and Elrond. Who's to say that they don't take advantage of the fact that they could bring Gandalf in here too at the same time? Like, wouldn't it be nice to have this? Like, if you are so intent on having that transference from Lord of the Rings, wouldn't you want Gandalf in the show at this moment?
My Gandalf in my heart would not be the reason of Firefly deaths. I'm just saying.
You know what? You're right. You're not going to.
But I will say, the thing he's saying, it's like mono urai. It sounds like manure. Mono urai, you know? It supposedly means something about fire.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that Gandalf can bring about fire when he does that whole cool whippy thing.
Yep.
So we know that he's able to do that kind of stuff, but probably every wizard can. Probably every wizard says the word fire at some point in their life.
Yeah, I'm not going to say no.
But could he be asking to be brought to the mountain of fire?
Maybe. Maybe.
I don't trust this guy.
I don't trust it either.
Plus, who eats shells of snails?
Only crazy people.
Exactly.
Bad people eat snail shells.
Yes. And I feel like, that's why I'm telling you, I'm afraid for the Harfoot race. No wonder they're not here in the Third Age.
Then, speaking of fire, by the way, we have Celebrimbor, who is hanging out with Elrond, and Elrond seems to want to bring Celebrimbor to
Khazad-dûm
to create some sort of partnership and alliance so that the dwarves would come out of Khazad-dûm and help build the one tower that would house this furnace that Celebrimbor wants to build so that they can create things that will help change the very face of Middle-earth.
I was so on Durin's team for this encounter. I am pleased that Elrond and Celebrimbor seem to have walked the entire way. Because I know about the elves in the future. They have deer and elk and moose and horses. And yet for some reason, the elves here.
They're just walking.
Yeah. They need to stop at REI to get some new boots.
We call that the Father Peerleg route.
Get from the Last Kingdom. Water pack. And Celebrimbor and Elrond's there. Oh, we're going to eat. It's going to be great. I know where we can get cheap labor.
Yeah, sure. My buddy.
Yeah, and they're going to feed us.
It's going to be great.
And then he shows up. The dwarves say no. And he says, okay, Celebrimbor, you got to turn around. No moose. No elk.
Just see you later.
No REI to stop and get some new trail mix.
Trail mix.
Goodbye.
You got a protein bar? No? Okay, sucks to suck.
And yet Elrond goes in thinking he's the best. It made me feel like those friends that leave you high and dry until they need you to paint the rooms in their house.
Oh, they gotta get you to move.
I'm moving. Do you think, I'll pay you with beer or pizza? What?
No.
Where have you been? You missed my wedding. You missed the baby's birth.
You think I want to paint your walls?
Why are you just calling me when you need work? This is a terrible relationship. So I was on Durin's side for this.
Yeah, Team Durin on this one too. I agree. And again, you kind of have to be because of the relationship that is shown between the two. You, as a normal human being, understand the fact that 20 years is a long existence. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mary, we haven't even been together for 20 years. And we've been together for a long time. I mean, we met back in 07.
Now, granted, that is a blink of an eye for an elf, so I can appreciate. But here's the only thing I could say about Durin. Okay. Did you send Elrond a wedding invitation, a save the date, a birth announcement? I doubt it, because Elrond seems to love mail. You know, he was writing his letter. I feel like that guy would be meticulous. If he received an invitation, he probably would put it in his calendar. He would have gone on the Amazon wish list ahead of time to make sure he gets the perfect gift. He would have spent the extra money on the nice wrapping paper that reminded him of leaves. Got a matching card. You know, the expensive kind that has like a foil to it.
Yep.
He would have done all the ribbons and everything. If Elrond had properly been invited to the wedding, he would have been there.
Absolutely.
He's not busy.
He would have gotten the most expensive thing in the registry.
He hasn't been fighting with Galadriel. He's just been at home writing little notes. So part of me says, Durin.
Elrond's planner is...
He does the bullet journaling.
Oh, and you know what he has too? He has the colored little... Like the little tabs so that he knows certain colors mean certain things.
Exactly.
And, yes.
I was about ready for him to say, you didn't invite me. How was I to know?
Let me bring out my schedule.
All I saw were your Facebook pics that everybody shared. And I said, wow, didn't get invited to another party of
Durin's.
Thanks
for that. Am I complaining now, Durin?
Yeah.
No, I'm not complaining.
Did you come to my 792nd birthday party? I'm not complaining to you.
Yet, nevertheless, I am still on Team Durin. And
you are too?
I'm on Team Durin.
Nice.
Yeah, you can't be skipping out on me for 20 years. You can't be skipping out on me. And the fact here is that Elrond, even though his ignorance is charming, and his ignorance about it is you understand his perspective. He still has enough emotional intelligence and wherewithal to look at Durin and say, congratulations.
Yes.
And I'm very sorry, and please let me apologize to your bride.
I thought he was going to apologize first when he put his hand there.
Yes.
And I loved that he said congratulations first.
You want to know why? Because of Jennifer freaking Hutchinson. That's why. She is awesome.
I would have said I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But his saying congratulations made me rethink that maybe I've apologized too much too quickly and I should say the nice thing first and then I'm sorry.
Yep. Yep.
Well done, Elrond.
And all of this works because later on when they go to the dinner, and again, they have the scene with the kids and running around with the helmets on, and Disa's like, no, he's staying for dinner. Don't you worry. It reminds me, if you recall, remember the movie World War Z? The one with Brad Pitt and the zombies and everything? Yeah. Damon Lindelof was brought in as a writer for that film to, like, after it was all written, Brad Pitt contacted him and said, hey, I love what you did on Lost. I need you to come here and make our characters likable. And Damon Lindelof, what he did, the first thing he did was, if you remember the scene in World War Z at the beginning of the film.
I don't.
Okay, well, I'm just saying for you, the listener, if you remember the film, there's a scene where Brad Pitt and his wife are in bed, and it's their kids come running into the room, mm-hmm. and it makes that they're talking about pancakes or whatever, and they have this great familial moment in bed after they wake up. That is what makes characters likable, and the same exact thing happens here in the dinner scene with Durin and Disa and the family and Elrond. And speaking of Elrond, Mary, we have, as we had mentioned earlier, the whole thing with Celebrimbor and their relationship, and that's what ended up getting Elrond into Casa Doom anyway.
Yes.
Listen, the whole thing with this, with the Silmarils and the Hammer of Fëanor. And
ready? Like, you want to hear a sound?
What?
Right over my head. Right over my head.
So the Fëanor was this, elven smith, just like Celebrimbor is, okay? But this was from the First Age. And Fëanor...
Hopefully he wasn't as snobby.
Celebrimbor seems all right to me.
No. On the elf level of snobbiness,
yeah,
he's like, up there with the king.
What's a scale, on a scale of 1 to 10, where is he at?
Okay, so the least snobby, I have Elrond.
Okay, fair enough.
Second least snobby, Finrod.
Oh, okay.
You know, they're neck and neck.
Here's a dark horse for you, Galadriel.
She'd be right in the middle.
Little snobby.
Yeah, she's in the middle. She's not snob. She is snob.
Sure.
But not snobby.
So Celebrimbor is in between Galadriel and the High King? Are we like at an eight and a half?
They are neck and neck.
All right, fair enough.
I think Celebrimbor thinks he's higher class than the king.
Well,
he's fancy.
He has a goal, and that is to create something that is as beautiful and as useful for Middle-earth as was the Silmarils. And the Silmarils were these jewels that were created by Fëanor, which was another, as we said, elven smith. And Morgoth came into possession of the Silmarils, and that is what they're talking about when they're saying, this hammer, it created something of such beauty but caused so much pain. And that story is covered in the Silmarillion, of course, but naturally the show can't go into that because it doesn't have the rights to the Silmarillion. So they just kind of allude to it. In this case, though, Celebrimbor is building this big tower, and that big tower is for the idea that they're going to create something. Now, I feel like we can all say this with a pretty safe bet that Celebrimbor is going to be the guy that creates the Rings of Power.
I think that is a safe deduction.
I think it is fair to say that. What do you think about this? Do you? I know you said that he's snobby, but which is really funny that you're saying that. But what do you think about this? And what do you think about Elrond actually being like? I just find it so ironic in the most beautiful way that Elrond is potentially the person who helps bring the Rings of Power into existence. And like, is that why he takes such a big stance on making sure Sauron's defeated?
I think he's going to feel a lot of guilt. A lot of guilt.
Sure.
A big old whoops.
You know what he's saying? He's going to say in his bed at night. He's going to say this.
Not great, Bob.
He is going to have to look at those abandoned, dead caves of Khazad Dûm and know that some of it is his fault.
Mm-hmm. All right, my love, is there anything else? It's all his fault.
It is all your... It's not all his fault, but some of it is his fault. He's a sweet little thing who I just want to give a big old hug to.
Yep.
So, yeah, Celebrimbor, goodbye. I'm not here for him. I'm just gross. I'm done. He's not going to be my friend. However, Durin, you know, he's my jam. I loved
even though he's lying to Elrond about whatever he and his father have in that little case.
Why do we think he's lying?
Well, because he's withholding.
Who cares? Well, withholding and lying is not the same thing. I haven't seen this guy in 20 years.
You've told me many times that withholding and lying are the same thing.
When it's with me. When it's a guy you haven't seen for 20 years.
Fair.
Need to know basis.
Okay, and he don't need to know.
No, you didn't come to my wedding. You, however, were the person I married at my wedding.
Gotcha.
No withholding.
Okay, fair enough.
I loved seeing Khazad Dûm.
Yeah, and the theme for Khazad Dûm from Bear McCreary?
That is the musical choice that I would like pulled up today.
Okay, hold on 1 second.
Because it's my favorite piece from episode 2. Just a gentle reminder, of course, that Bear McCreary seems to be dropping new albums every single episode. If you wanted to check it out and you just... I actually find them very pleasant to go to sleep to.
Oh.
There's a couple of them. But not as great to sleep to, but you just hit that little skip button and you are good to go.
All right, here we go.
Khazad Dûm is one that the children and I have been listening to. Mm-hmm. So, Blake, why don't you start it off?
Let's do it.
So, obviously, we've got this low percussion, low strings, loads of percussion here in Khazad Dûm.
Metal banging.
That's called a cymbal.
Sure.
Yeah.
That, whatevs.
Yeah. And we've got these beautifully low, deep male voices.
Yep.
Very much along the same lines as the Hobbit movie when all the dwarves are over in Bilbo's house.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they just start bloody singing. Singing all together.
Out of nowhere.
Yes. And he's standing there like, how do you guys know the same song? It must be an elf and dwarf thing, I guess. But I just, you feel that. You feel that.
And notice the direct opposition to the elven style, which is, you know, very ethereal, almost like high
notes. Those are the higher voices. Exactly. We've got some nice low brass once again, but it's very it's a march. It's just very militant and strict with this pacing of it, which I almost picture the dwarves, you know, like just marching. Kind of marching along. Exactly.
With their little legs.
The brass make me think just about the brilliance that we do have inside Khazad Dûm with all the lights. Because, of course, we've seen it demolished and dark and with death.
Yeah.
Did you feel like the stairs that they were walking down as we hear that theme?
Yeah. Oh, you want me to bring it back up again?
It's, okay. I mean, it can just be low.
All right.
As Elrond is walking down the stairs, he's being led to have the rock smash.
Yes.
Rock smash off with I forget what it's called. I invoke...
Oh, the Sigin Taraj.
Ah, yes. Yeah, when he's going to go do Sigin... God bless you. those reminded me of the stairs that the Fellowship had to run across in Fellowship of the Ring as they're doing their grand escape through Moria.
You shall not pass.
Yes. So it's just... you can't not see it. Obviously, they can't copy the same exact thing.
Right.
But it's in the
But the visual book. Language is there.
Yes.
You know, it's there. It's at least suggesting it. Very interesting.
We and some
you know
what I noticed? Voices.
Which naturally actually makes sense to me because of the resonating.
Exactly. Right? And this is what's really cool is we know that they're singing inside these grand, strong, firm rocks. So you have this pretty melody with these female voices coming on through with still that harshness.
Yep.
So this is my favorite.
The thing that I love most about Khazad Dûm, aside from Durin, you know, putting the tree in there and, oh, how could this tree not grow when it's surrounded by love the way that it is? That's great. But the thing that I love most about Khazad Dûm is how they project light into the mountain. They have it reflecting the sun and it reflects off of each mirror, and it goes throughout the rest, and you can see it almost like as a spotlight. And there's that great scene as Elrond and Durin are going up the elevator, as the conversation starts to lighten a little bit between the two, where they're starting to have,
after the mea culpa, the I'm sorry,
they're starting to have a little bit of an understanding of each other, the light carries over them. Such a cool effect, and just part of the world building that we're getting.
I'm excited to hang on out with Disa a little bit more, Prince Durin's wife.
Yes.
I don't know if we'll see the kids' faces. And I kind of wonder if that's on purpose, because what would dwarves' kids look like? Would they have beards? Would they... I don't know. I just don't know.
Do they have early onset puberty? Like,
I don't know. So I'm just, I really don't, it'll be fine.
There's one other thing that I want to talk about, and this is not necessarily about the dwarves, unless you have something that you wanted to mention about the dwarves.
I was going to switch lands altogether. So while we're in Khazad Dûm, go for it.
Okay. Well, I'm not talking about the dwarves. I'm actually talking back again about the Harfoots. And I noticed that when...
They're in Rovanian.
Okay, when they're there, and the stranger, you know, Nori meets up with the stranger again, and he yells and he freaks out and whatever. He's writing these runes, and it looks like he's writing the symbol of Sauron at one point.
Oh.
I could be wrong. It looks that way, but again, maybe wrong. Either way, as he's writing the runes, Nori's father is putting up this little tent.
Oh.
And he snaps his foot.
Oh, and, so gross.
And it was gross. I know Mary was, she was not happy not with that happy. Scene.
Nope.
But the way that it was edited.
As someone who has had a major bone break.
Oh, yeah.
You know that sound.
The way that this scene was edited, the intent seems to be that there was as I had suggested, there was a connection between Galadriel and the stranger. That... I'm pulling that from the text, but the way that this particular scene was edited, this scene clearly states that there is some sort of connection between the runes that the stranger is writing and the words that he is muttering, and the fact that the rope is breaking and then eventually breaks, and that causes Nori's father to break his ankle.
Once again, another check mark for I don't think this guy is good news.
It's all fair, you know. On the other hand, the devil's advocate in me says maybe this person just isn't aware of the power that they have.
I don't care. You just hurt Nori's dad. What did he do to you? Now we can't travel. Is he going to be left behind?
So I'd love to know between the firefly. I keep wanting to say mosquitoes. Between the fireflies dying, the thing happened with Nori's dad.
I think the thing with Nori's dad is actually going to play a major role.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about can they migrate?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that means they would leave him behind, or if because Harfoot stick together, are they going to stick together? And is that going to cause them some massive difficulties because they won't be able to go... You know, towards the next land that needs to be harvested. And is this why they die?
this is why when you watch a show, you have to pay attention to what is happening. That this edit makes a clear connection between the two. And if you're watching it and you're paying attention to what the edit shows, it's not just about what's being said or the colors, whatever, but it's how the story is being presented to you. It's not just about what the story is saying. It's how it is being said to you, which will help inform what you're watching.
All right. So we'll talk about man now. Humans.
Okay.
Because let's be real. Humans right now are the most boring ones of
I don't know, with
the people.
With Theo right now.
Yeah. No, he's the exception.
Yeah.
We do need to address our friends on the boat, however.
Yes. So we have Halbrand, and then we have a bunch of people who
just die.
Apparently, their boat got screwed up by the worm. Maybe they were on the way from wherever to wherever. Who knows? Maybe they were coming from the Southlands. Who knows?
Yes, they were coming from the Southlands.
Okay, yep. Because the orcs destroyed there.
So I'm picturing that they are from...
Oh, that town.
Harmond's. I feel like that was it. The one that Bronwyn and Arryn go to check out. And that there's nobody there.
Yes.
Okay? So that's where I'm picturing these people to be from.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if that means that maybe this guy is Theo's dad. Like, if these people were originally from that village,
oh, and
Bronwyn, yeah, if Halbrand is Theo's dad. Halbrand.
Oh, I don't want to get into that,
I don't know. I'm just saying, if I think he's from there, and so is Bronwyn, and now nobody's there, and they said the orcs ruined everything and burned it all, so I'm just assuming that that was their town.
Fair.
That they were running from, and now they're trying to go back to. But in my mind, I'm like, why would you just run away and go on a boat?
Mm-hmm.
Where were you trying to go? Why don't you just go to the next town ask for some help? Excuse me.
Go hang out where Bronwyn is.
Exactly. But instead, they did something else. Yep. And he did leave everybody. So that's another thing that I don't trust him. I don't trust Halbrand. Because Galadriel's right. You just left all your friends to die.
Right. That's a good point. Very good point.
I think Halbrand...
Bad news?
I think he's Sauron in disguise.
Oh, I like it.
Because he is from that dark area.
I like it.
And in this episode, the humans from Bronwyn's town were saying, we're waiting for our king to return. And I bet you they mean Sauron as their king.
Oh, I like it.
And it's going to be him.
Yep.
And he's been hanging out with Galadriel this whole time, getting to know her. And she's going to trust him. And how wicked will that be?
That irony.
If the person that she's been traveling with and that she opens up to a bit over time ends up being the man that she's been chasing. Oh,
yes, I like it. And that's why she's so stoic later on in the Lord of the Rings series.
And that's why Theo's a mess, because he's really his son.
You know what?
Multiple theories, only one. But I'm sticking to the Sauron thing.
Mary, I'm in on this theory.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
I'm kind of in on this theory.
I'm telling you, I don't trust anybody right now. If you are involved in death and it is okay with you, like, he's not crying that his friends are dead and eaten by the worm.
Sure.
He's not sad.
Yep. Yep, I agree.
You're bad to me.
I like it.
Thank you.
I like this idea that the kid might be Sauron's kid, and that's why the blood goes to the sword. That's why the sword manifests itself.
Maybe he becomes a Nazgul.
Maybe he's one of the kings.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I like it. Yeah. Mary. Mary, Mary, Mary.
Bam! What's like that? A winner!
Is it the black dark speech? Is it? Whatever it is, what the subtitles tell me it is.
Yeah, sure.
It's like Saruman's language. Sauron's language.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about for this episode, my darling?
No. Except Elrond? He's not standing up to his promise.
What do you mean?
What did he promise Galadriel?
That he would make sure that everything gets taken care of.
If
he sees anything wrong.
If he finds out anything's wrong.
Yes.
Well, he found out that there's some truth to it. And instead, the Bloody King distracts him and says, Elrond, you know, you're so good at this. I'm just going to praise you and distract you. Elrond, you just found out that there might be some truth to this, that you swore that you would take care of. And this is why he's going to have even more guilt,
because
he's going to be upset that he was distracted by this when he should have followed that little line of truth.
I like it. All right, you ready to get into some trivia?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Oh, it's my job to read it this time.
Yes.
Sorry.
I read it last time.
It's just not in pink in the Google Docs.
Well,
it's okay. All right. So this, of course, is the trivia that is shown on the side of the page when you're watching Amazon Prime Video. But if you're watching it on a TV, it's a little hard to see it.
So you get to rely on us.
We're here for you, friends. We will be your touchscreen friends. All right. So the stars are especially beloved by the elves, who revere the Vala Elbereth, also called Varda. But all of the cultures of Middle-earth have attributed constellations to the heavens above.
Very nice, very nice.
Given their diminutive size, halflings called humans the big folk and did their best to avoid crossing paths with them, thanks in part to their impressive knack for disappearing swiftly and silently.
Eregion.
Eregion, God bless you, is the new elven realm in Middle-earth. It's the one, of course. It's to the west of the Misty Mountains. It was founded in the early Second Age by Noldor high elves, especially known for their craftsmanship, and that's where Celebrimbor was, of course. The door is the original west gate of Khazad-dûm, the one that Elrond goes and knocks on and doesn't get in at first. On it are carved inscriptions in Sirth, a runic alphabet originally derived by the elves, but adapted for dwarven purposes to carve their language into stone. Dwarves are shorter than elves and men, but they are tough, thrawn, laborious. Am I saying that right?
Laborious.
Laborious. That's how you say that word. I love that I like know words when I read them, but when I say them out loud. And famously, lovers of stone, gems. Oh, we forgot the gem. And all things created by craft. Don't forget, we need to talk about the gem.
No, that's what I one of the theories. Oh.
Okay. Despite, or perhaps because of it, the difficulties of an another word that I don't know how to say.
Itinerant.
Itinerant life. It's like I don't speak for a living. And challenges of finding their next meal. Halflings have a deep love of food and an undoubtedly adventurous appetite. They'd eat 6 meals a day if they could. The Great Sea, or the Sundering Seas, divides the Undying Lands from Middle-earth, where they are still nameless things in the deepest places of the world.
Thus the, like worm.
Yes. Elves and dwarves have traditionally held many grievances against each other. Embers of the dwarves' grudge against the elves linger even from the Elder Days. Like all of Khazad-dûm, Durin's home is carved straight out of the mountain rock it's buried deep within, upheld by stone pillars. Gold and jewels are used generously, as there is no lack of such riches here, and magnificent lanterns keep the dark at bay. The men of Middle-earth can be known to fear and misdoubt elves, yet they often know little of them. Arendir's armor is typical of his garrison, the Sylvan Elves. Filled with natural influences of their many loves, the ring on his thumb bears the inscription, "May your arrows sing in Sindarin."
Wow.
There are many kinds of orcs of different sizes, best suited for specific purposes. They were first bred by the dark power of the North in the Elder Days. And though immortal and hardy of body, elves may still die by injury and unnatural causes, including drowning.
Oh, so like when those rats are going by Arendir and like he can't get poisoned, like maybe he can get poisoned by those rats because that was gross.
That, for those adults who've watched The Descent,
oh,
that's all I kept thinking about for poor Arendir.
Brutal.
That was the most suspense. They did a great job between the kitchen and orc scene and Arendir being in that little tunnel. Blake and I were trying to figure out, were those rats real? Were they CGI rats? Whatever they were, they gave us the heebie-jeebies. Yeah.
And then and get then, snatched.
Oh, the snatching.
Oh.
You know, last episode we watched, I thought, our 9-year-old can watch this.
Yeah.
This episode, he'd be having some nightmares. We wouldn't let our 7-year-old watch this. And mind you, this is not us casting any judgment because there's a lot of 7-year-olds who can handle this.
Sure.
Our kids, between Bear McCreary's score and the creepy orcs, our kids may not be watching.
I'm not sure if they would handle the slamming of the orc head down well on the counter.
No, the orc in general in this episode.
Oh yeah, that would be terrifying.
Anything orc related.
Yeah.
So our kids haven't been watching the show, nor will they for quite some time. But I like to look at each episode thinking, could my kids watch this? Our kids, gentle beings that they are, couldn't watch this one.
Yep. All right, and it's time for some hot takes. You ready for the hot takes, Mary? You got one?
Of course. You said you do.
You just gave a really good one, by the way. So I'll take it over for you.
Oh, what?
The hot takes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I got a hot take for you.
Oh.
Oh. Okay. All right. So here we go. I got two hot takes for you. I think it's important that what you said, Mary, actually kind of gives me this idea. That
about the dwarves or about man?
About Halbrand is actually Sauron.
Thanks.
And I like this idea because it is Galadriel and Halbrand, who is otherwise known as Sauron in this idea,
but we'll call him Halbrand normally.
Getting picked up at the end of this episode by one person. And my thought is that person is going to be Isildur. And now we all know that Isildur is the prince the human kingdom, who refuses to eventually give up the Ring of Power. And we all know this because of the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, and the monologue and the prologue that was given at the beginning of the film. So my thought is that Isildur, Galadriel, and who we are presuming, or you know, we're positing is Sauron, they all are together. And that is how Isildur is eventually...
Oh, so this like fuels my fire.
Yeah.
Of my theory.
Yeah.
That Halibram is Sauron.
Is Sauron.
Oh, I love it.
How cool would that be?
How cool would it be if I actually got a right theory? Because I don't get theories a lot.
Yep.
I'm proud of myself.
And Isildur refuses to give up the ring because he saw what it did to Halbrand and who eventually became Sauron.
Hmm.
And that's why he doesn't give it up.
I like this.
I like this idea. I like where we're going with this.
Okay, I'm happy.
Like we're writing our own show right now. But another option that I have here for a hot take is this. What Durin and his father are keeping from...
I told you what that was.
Well, yes. Well, you have an idea and I have an idea.
Okay.
What Durin is hiding from Elrond is, it could possibly be what you think that it is, Mary.
And I think
what
it's do you the think it Arkenstone.
Is? Yes.
I think it's the Arkenstone, that beautiful glowy stone that we saw in the Hobbit series, that the dwarves were obsessed with, that was stuck in the lot of all that, the money and jewels that the dragon Smaug was guarding right. over. Because I think it was said that it's part of like Durin's heirlooms.
Yes. So my thought...
It had the same pretty cotton candy glow.
So my thought is that this is one of the Silmarils that was forged by Feanor. And that is one of the things that the dwarves have found. And they're keeping it from the elves because that really means a lot to the elves. And if Sauron is back and he gets his hand on one of these Silmarils or whatever, it's like it ties everything together.
Okay.
If it's one of the Silmarils. It ties everything all together.
Could the Arkenstone be part Silmaril?
Maybe.
Could it be used in the Silmaril?
It could be. It absolutely could be. It could be. So
there you got it, friends. We've got a bunch of ideas.
That's our theory. All right, Mavin, you got anything else? You want to close this bad boy out?
That is it.
All right, let's do it.
Thank you so much, friends, for tuning in as we delved even more into the Tolkien world, including all of these lovely places with all of these interesting characters. We are so excited to be joining you episode by episode. If you're listening to this in a podcast app, do us a favor and write us a review. Your reviews are going to go a long way because there's a lot of Lord of the Rings podcasts out there.
Yes.
And we want to make sure that people know that ours exists and that you like it. The other thing that you can do is you can actually share this podcast with a friend. You can hit that share button on your podcast app and share it in your social media. Another great way to do it is actually in your stories. You could do a screenshot of this app playing right in your phone right now. As long as you're not driving, you could screenshot it and pop it in there and suggest to people that they check out this podcast if they're a fan of the show as well.
And if you're doing that on the social media, please go ahead and check out Mary and Blake and all the social media platforms that are available to you, whether it is Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, whatever platform you're on, we're on there too. Check us out. Get in contact with us. Reach out.
We are officially the eighth podcast for the Lord of the Rings kind of stuff for Rings of Power.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So we want to thank our friends. We've had 3 ratings. And you know what? I'm just going to shout you all out by name.
Okay.
Thank you, Sabasa Bees. I'm close somewhere. And then Jay McKenney.
I'm on Burgundy.
And then someone else did a rating. Remember, when you do a rating, you want to also leave the review. You want to write a couple of sentences. It goes a long, long way.
Yes, and of course, one last thing that we would like you to do is to check out jointhenerdclan.com. Because as we have told you before, this is a mom and pop podcast shop. We are not aligned with any of the major corporations or any of that stuff. We are here talking about Lord of the Rings just because we can. And we get to say all the things that we do because that's what we truly believe. And the only way we can keep this going is by your support at jointhenerdclan.com. Become one of the members at the Nerd Clan. Trust me, you won't regret it. It's amazing. It's a lot of fun.
It's literally
and you get
$2
a month. Free fun swag too. So
that's right. And we'll be sending you holiday cards for our friends who are
and gifts.
Levels and gifts. So
oh, yeah.
Keep your eyes peeled there. All right, friends. My name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
And you've been listening to The Rings of Power with Marian Blake.
Khazad-dûm!